This time, the polls got it wrong. The French stared at the prospect of a far-right win and, despite the start of summer vacation, came out and voted, their greatest number since 1981, to stop that populist surge. Instead, what have we got? A left-wing alliance cobbled together 3 weeks ago after Emmanuel Macron's shock dissolution of parliament. It can boast the largest bloc in the next parliament, but it's far, very far, from an outright majority. With Marine Le Pen's national rally hitting another record high in numbers of seats and the prospect of another snap election in 12 months if parliament is stuck with this three-way gridlock with the center-right, can the French do the unthinkable, that is, be like the Germans? A compromise, find creative solutions, build coalitions based on party platforms, not Bonapartist personality contests. Emmanuel Macron promised the snap elections would clarify, those were his words, clarify France's political landscape. Instead, with power back in the hands of parliament for the first time since before 1958, politicians are going to have to draw the lessons of this tumultuous election cycle and address the grievances of an electorate that wants change. Today in the France 24 debate, we're asking who to govern France with us. She's Paris Deputy Mayor, Socialist City Councillor Olivia Porski. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Welcome back as well to Sonia Crémy. You were a candidate for Emmanuel Macron's Ensemble party in the northwest suburbs of Paris. Unsuccessful.
Yes.
Our condolences.
No problem.
With us as well, Maxime Darmé, senior economist for France at Insurers Alliance.
That's correct.
Good to see you.
Thank you.
And Rachel Donadio, Paris correspondent for The Atlantic. How are things?
Okay.
Okay. Your reactions on the hashtag F24 debate. Yeah, it's an unprecedented outcome. Ever since France's Fifth Republic began under General de Gaulle, in previous instances of power sharing, well, you know, the opposition to the president had a clear, outright majority. Charlie James has more on what is now a three-way contest.
The election is over, but the fight to form a French government has just begun. With no clear path toward a majority, Prime Minister Gabriel Attal submitted his resignation to President Emmanuel Macron Monday morning. Macron asked Attal to stay on in a caretaker capacity, since it's unknown how long it will take for his successor to be decided. Left-wing Green Party leader Marine Tondelier says Macron should choose a prime minister from the leftist bloc, which won the most seats.
According to institutional logic, Emmanuel Macron should today officially call on the new Popular Front to give him the name of a prime minister. Will he do so or will he not? Macron is always full of surprises. We'll see, but that's the institutional logic.
Meanwhile, the far-right national rally, after underperforming expectations, claims the results are a win for the party nonetheless.
This morning, when we look at the numbers of votes that we have received, more and more votes, for example, than the Popular Front, that is something to celebrate. It is not a defeat because we didn't get a relative or absolute majority. I believe it's a victory postponed.
France is now facing weeks of political uncertainty and, depending on how a coalition pans out, a state of permanent disagreement in parliament.
Olivia Porski, were you surprised by the result?
Well, we were relieved, I think, first of all, because we thought the far right could be first. So we were really relieved, and then we were happy to see that this left coalition was successful. So we are the first coalition now. So I think that Emmanuel Macron should take our candidate for the prime ministry.
You, Sonia Crémy, had to bow out for the second round. You could have been qualified for the second round of voting.
I was MP. You know, I was MP in Cherbourg for 5 years, so I know exactly what happened when we have not enough voice for the second tour. So I prefer to clarify my position, to give my all my... nobody can give his voice, really, but we can say exactly what we want, that our voter vote for the second tour. And I was clear. I was clear for these left wings. I came from the Social Party, as you know, and it was it was clear for me to do it. And I was happy that Gabriel Attal, he was clear for before the second tour when he asked all the people like me when we have the third place to vote and to stop their, how to say it in English, to stop our candidate and to give our voice and to call for voice for the right. But when we talk today about this large majority, it's not a large majority, between Ensemble and between the center and between the left wing, the huge left wing, we have 14 MP. It's not like we called their first group today in the French Assembly, of course, but they cannot handle, I think, that they cannot handle by themselves all the majority. It means they need us to run and to handle the government, our places. Maybe they want a really a first prime minister from the left wing, and I can understand. But I can say also that Gabriel Attal, he came from the left wing. We will see what happened in the future day, but I think we have to work together.
We're going
to
talk horse trading in a moment. You know, sandwiched between the two rounds here were British elections, Rachel Denine, and people are asking, what is this French system where you have one party that comes out way ahead after the first round but then gets thwarted in the runoff?
Would you like me to explain the French parliamentary system in 10 words or less? It's rather confusing, but I think what we saw in the difference between the first round and the second round is exactly what Sonia is explaining, which is...
Far right says it's not fair.
Well, the far right is now going to claim that it's a victim, even though it gained 58% more seats than it did before. But the system is very clear. If there's a three-way race, the third person drops out and lends support so that it's a clear two-way race. And that's why the national rally we thought would do better, but it didn't do as well because the left saved the center.
The left saved the center. Was anyone expecting this kind of turnout, Maxime Dalmet, and this kind of result?
Well, I think everybody was surprised. But from a market perspective, we got a hung parliament now, so meaning we don't have any party or coalition securing an absolute majority, and the market was quite relieved this morning.
The market's relieved because it's a hung parliament.
Exactly. Because from a market perspective, the market doesn't like strong majority from either the left or the right.
So they prefer gridlock.
Exactly. They prefer gridlock, or at least this is the least bad outcome they would have. Because if you are, let's say, the left coalition, so the Nouveau Front Populaire, or the far right, National Rally, these two parties or these two coalitions, they're actually advocating for fiscal expansions. That is a widening of the public deficit in a context of really strained French public finances. So the market, you know, is looking, and now France is clearly under the radar and the watch list. The public finances are in really bad shape. So if you do a fiscal expansion in this context, the market would probably not like this.
Again, there's the makeup of the next parliament. You saw it in that report at the outset when it sits for its inaugural session in 10 days' time. There you see the numbers once again, and you see in the graph there, three blocks, three big ones, plus you can add the rump of what used to be the Gaullist Party, the Conservatives, who are on 60 seats. Would they side with the centrists or not? That's one prospect. But there's also, when you break it down by party, you see a different story in terms of political parties, not alliances here. The far-right National Rally, it's gone from 89 to 126 seats. It got a huge share of the vote, record for this party in any campaign, probably under the third, fourth, or Fifth Republic, Rachel Donadio. And in the two-hole, Emmanuel Macron's party makes a late comeback.
It made a late comeback because people are choosing between the far right and a candidate from Renaissance or from the leftist coalition in a lot of places. I think that we see that Macron's in this strange state of limbo, right, where he is still very much in power. He's still the president, but the party is weaker than it used to be. It lost many, many, many seats, several cabinet ministers, and then the National Rally did do much better. And now the question is really, what kind of government can we make out of these results?
Olivia Polsky, over in the UK, Keir Starmer won a whopping majority, but The Labour Party's share of the vote went from 40% in 2017 to 34% on Thursday. Here, again, the National Rally is shut out of power, but its share of the vote rises, its share of the seats rise. What does that tell you? What's the answer?
Well, the first thing is that it's their highest in history, in the French history, their highest score. So we have to keep preoccupied. It's not the end. And then after that, the Republican rempart worked, because we have a tradition of, mostly with the left parties, of anti-fascism coalition. So that's what we did, an anti-fascism coalition now. And that's why we are so high, because we united with that point. But the main change is that now Emmanuel Macron is not the strongest president he used to be. It's the end. We are entering in a parliamentary regime, I think, now. Everything will happen there.
We're entering into a parliamentary regime. But I'm going to ask about that. But first, Sonia Khemi, the district where you ran, I guess, is sort of emblematic, because you have urban areas and you have more rural areas in that district. And this rise of the far right, how do you read it, and how do you stop it?
Yeah. From the first day when we started this election, I found myself in front of people that told me we don't need the word that we hear every day. We don't feel as a Muslim. We can say it. We can say today I'm Muslim, so I can talk easily about that. I have a Muslim that I say, I cannot find myself in my country. And I have a Jewish friend also. They tell me the same thing. And I have a black people also. They tell me the same thing. I don't feel myself in our country. And I think, to be honest, we fail on that. We fail to reassure people. We fail.
What are you saying? To integrate people?
Yeah.
To assimilate?
Emmanuel Macron of 2017, he have this popular vote, because he was clear on colonization, he was clear on refugees, he was clear on a lot of things. And I joined him at that time for that. I still with him because I'm loyal girl to our central party. But for immigration, for migration, and for Palestine, for example, we failed. A lot of political analysts, they told me, no, we have to talk about budget. But it wasn't what people says to me for weeks in the field. People, they talk about this feeling of we are not safe as Jewish. We are not. We don't feel that we are in our country as Muslim. We found that we are pointed by Dar Manan for black people, etc., etc. I think we can say things today, but they have this feeling. They don't talk about budget. Sorry for that. They don't talk about anything. They talked about Gaza and what happened in Gaza, and they talk about
the buying power and the buying power,
spending
salaries
power?
And so on.
Power. Sorry,
they didn't talk about spending power and
spending yes. power,
how, purchasing how, power. Buying, you mean?
Yeah.
Purchasing power.
Yes,
also. The cost of living crisis.
Also.
Rachel Donadio, you've reported for a while on France's notion of secularism. You've and how this assimilation is going through difficult times in this period of globalization, this tussle with multiculturalism that, according to what Sonia Khemi is saying, her constituents feel like it's not working.
I think that French laïcité is a quite complicated concept to explain and to articulate, but it's clear that in this election campaign and in recent years, there's been a weaponization of that debate on both sides. And I think that many people of different faith backgrounds in France, as Sonia is saying, don't necessarily feel welcome in their own country. At the same time, after losing the legislative elections or losing seats, losing his majority in 2022, Emmanuel Macron governed in coalition with the Républicains, and that meant that he was essentially shifting rightward. So we had the law about what's it called, valeur de la République,
the values of the Republic
law, and where there's been an intermingling of questions of national identity and national security. And I think that alienated a lot of the constituents in Sonia's district. But it's also something that has clearly come up in this election as well.
The far right, which has brought people to the polls who hadn't voted in a long time as well, because we saw when we saw a lot of proxy voting in, before the first round, we thought, oh, this is going to be bad for the far right. Turns out it wasn't. So again, there's this idea that France has become a more fragmented, polarized place. You agree with that?
Well, I don't know if I'm doing. The question was for me or for you?
The question is for you, yeah. Maxime Dalmé.
Well, I'm an economist, so I don't think I'm the better place to answer this question.
We've had all these years of Emmanuel Macron selling the fact that France is open for investment, that
exactly.
It's this place.
So, yeah, you're raising a very interesting question. So, as you said, Emmanuel Macron ran very pro-business policies. Huh? Mm-hmm. The business were very happy with Emmanuel Macron. Investment in France was really strong. Much stronger than the peers. The labor market was really strong as well.
But so you heard Sonia Crémy say, it's not all about the
economy. No, exactly. But from a pure economic standpoint, he managed to pass some supply-side reforms, what we call in economics. So reforms which are supposed to increase the potential rate of the economy. Unfortunately, it didn't flow down to the people. So they felt very frustrated of not reaping the benefits of these reforms. So first of all, it takes time. Unfortunately, these reforms take a lot of time before really increasing GDP growth and benefiting the people. And also, I think, as you said, economics is not everything. So there are also other areas of frustration. From my perspective, I can see that the people, you know, care about. They voted on, security maybe, immigration. Economics is not the only topic, you know.
And so now we find ourselves in a situation where you have these three blocs, none with any possibility of having an outright majority as it stands. The old joke goes that in France, we don't have oil, but we have ideas. Well, wanted some creative thinking for what comes next. Inker Yatare has that.
In France's new divided National Assembly, the only thing certain is a power struggle. Parliament's lower house now essentially split into three blocks, far right, center, and left. None are close to the 289 seats required for an absolute majority. French center-left leader Raphael Glucksmann is calling on MPs to work together, despite not liking each other.
We are in a divided parliament, so people are going to have to behave like adults. We're going to have to talk to each other. We have to accept that the National Assembly is now the heart of power.
So can they cooperate? The far-left France Unbowed party, a member of the leftist bloc, will not work with President Emmanuel Macron's centrists.
We refuse to enter into negotiations with his party and play his games.
But there has been talk of a so-called rainbow coalition, comprised of the leftist Greens to the center-right Republicans.
You exclude the extremes on the extreme left and the extreme right, and you have a Democratic and Republican group which, according to me, should talk to each other, recognize each other, accept each other, and the next day govern together.
However, France has no experience with broad coalitions, and few other parties are eager to associate with Macron, whose approval rating is in the 20s. Another option is a technocratic government made up of politically neutral experts who manage day-to-day affairs until there's a political breakthrough. But this, too, would be a departure from French tradition. The clock is ticking. The National Assembly convenes on July 18th, and the Summer Olympics are less than 3 weeks away.
Olivia Polsky, what do you think of a rainbow coalition? Would that be a good idea?
First of all, I think that this is the gamble of Emmanuel Macron was a failure. So this is the first thing to do. So they have to stop to be that arrogant, stop saying what the left should choose. We are going to choose between us who can be the prime minister, then after. But saying, first of all, we don't want this one, we don't want this one, I think this is not the solution to have a real coalition. And when I saw today that Emmanuel Macron had lunch with some Republicans leaders,
Républicains, a conservative party.
Yes, Valérie Pécresse and so on. I think this is very strange. Come on. By doing this, I don't know what he's doing. But if he tries another tactic, I think it will fail. So I think that Emmanuel Macron should stop all this. Let us do, let the left do his part, and then we'll see how we can find a majority together.
All right, we can cross now outside the French presidential palace to France 24's Clovis Casali. Clovis, there's a lot going on in Paris this Monday. Several arrondissements away from you, behind closed doors, the leaders of the left are in the midst of trying to agree on a consensus candidate, honing their platform. Where you are, as you just heard Olivia Polsky say, there's been a lot of to-ing and fro-ing, starting with, of course, the prime minister tendering his resignation and then offering to stay on as caretaker. Of course, constitutionally, Clovis, Emmanuel Macron doesn't have to ask the left alliance to form the next government.
Indeed, it's the tradition for the French president to pick the prime minister from the party that has the majority of seats. The problem is you've got this left-wing coalition made up of several parties. And what we are witnessing here is a situation where the French president is in no rush, really. And that's why Gabriel Attal is staying put for the time being. That's why Gabriel Attal, the prime minister, said yesterday that he could continue being the prime minister even through the Olympic Games, because there's a need for stability. That's what the Élysée said. So what we are witnessing here is also the French president possibly trying to get a coalition government, but without the radical left France embowed of Jean-Luc Mélenchon. His entourage has always said, no way, we won't govern with them, and they don't want to govern with us anyway. So that's why President Macron wants to create some kind of government, some kind of majority that could stand in parliament that goes from the Conservative Party, Les Républicains, right to the Communists. But will the new Popular Front, the left-wing bloc, crumble? There are signs that there are deep divisions running in that left-wing bloc, with France en bas, the radical left, angering many from the left wing, notably Jean-Luc Mélenchon, their leader, who's clearly infuriated many at the left. So now it's all about negotiations. In the coming days, we'll see what happens. Bear in mind also the French president is heading on Wednesday to Washington for the NATO summit. Again, it does not seem that the French president is in any rush.
Olivia Polsky, you just heard Clovis Casali. Many thanks, Clovis, for that update outside the presidential palace. So would you be amenable to, let's say, if putting aside Jean-Luc Mélenchon, who's been sort of branded as the French Jeremy Corbyn, kind of toxic for the rest of the left, and trying to form some kind of a grand coalition?
Well, our coalition.
She wants to say yes, but she can't.
Left coalition said that we are going to meet many times, and then we will say who's going to be the one who has been chosen. So I think you have to wait a little bit.
So and you think the left coalition will
have,
stand?
We will have a name, and then he has to take it.
But aside from the name issue, it's really also a question of policy. We have a socialist politician and a Renaissance politician here on the stage. Where do you see policy converging? What are some areas where you think you can find convergence?
I would also add there's also the, I mean, political gridlock is probably going to continue for the next couple of weeks. We don't know. Maybe
through the Olympics, says Clovis.
Through the Olympics, maybe we're going to have a technocratic government. So MPs from the left, from the right, implicitly or explicitly agreeing to back a government, because now the issue, I mean, the hard deadline is going to be, and I don't think many people have that in mind, is going to be end of September when the parliament has to vote the budget, the draft budget bill. Otherwise, the French state is going to be shut down. They need to pay the civil servants. They need to, you know, to decide.
So we'll have like a U.S.-style shutdown.
It's very unlikely because France, you know, constitution is very different from the U.S., but it's a possibility that if by end of September nobody agrees on a government, we don't have a budget. And if we don't have a budget, we're not running the state for 2025. We're not paying the civil servants, you know, all this kind of stuff, which we thought would only happen in the United States. Yeah. So I think by the end of September, the political parties may well have to find someone to rule the country.
Sonia Crimi.
Just two words about the failure of Emmanuel Macron, because we cannot say a failure when we have 200,000 industrial jobs. We cannot fail when we increase the budget of hospital, when we increase. So we have to be fair. I can understand that we say that he's arrogant, he's blah, 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 but we have to be fair with statistics and with numbers. But when we talk about Gabriel Attal, he was clear about the coalition that we can do after the second tour. We was clear. We can work with all the Republicans without
the voters...
Mélenchon and without Marine Le Pen. We cannot be more clear than that.
And if the left gets its act together and does come up with a common platform and a common candidate, I'm asking you a question here.
We have a common platform.
If they do get their act together and do have a common candidate, does Emmanuel Macron have a moral obligation, even though I know it's not in the Constitution, to ask them to have a first shot at trying to form a government?
If he can run the country with just 156, I think, MPs, so they can do it. I know the parliament, and I know that exactly we cannot vote when we have a group. When we have a group like that, they are the first group. You are the first group. I understand it, but you are the first group to have all the posts. We cannot. We don't talk enough about that. Before we have the election of the minister, we have the election of the president of the French Assembly. When we are the first party, the first number of the first MP's party in the French Assembly, you have all the posts. French, the president of the French Assembly, the secretary, etc., etc. They gave you force also. They gave you money, etc., etc. This is the first round that they will be done in the 18 July. But I think that Emmanuel Macron, it's my opinion, he have to listen to this left wing. But up to him, I'm not him, up to him to choose with which party he wanna
Maxime Dalmé, would the voters understand if the next government, after such a rejection of Emmanuel Macron, has his ensemble party in coalition?
I think it's only going to increase frustration among the voters. Huh? In France now, you got the three blocs, very divided. It's really hard to get them together to agree on anything. You were talking about the prospect of a left-wing government. I think I would say this is the second most likely outcome. I think the most likely outcome would be eventually a technocratic government.
Well, it just so happens that we have with us.
Yeah. So the second likely, I think, would be a minority left-wing government. Why is a minority? Because I don't think any MPs from Macron's coalition or from National Rally would ever support this government. So the first law they would try to pass, you know, they will be taken down. Mm. So either all of them, they will vote no confidence, motion censure, as we say in French. Mm-hmm. So this government will be taken down. Or they would try to pass some, you know, very contentious reform or laws, and nobody would agree on that.
Okay, so we have in our midst...
political deadlock.
She's not an expert on traffic light coalitions, but she knows all about technocratic governments as a former Rome correspondent, Rachel Donadio.
Mario Draghi for president of France. Prime Minister.
Would that work? Can Mario Draghi be roped in?
I think... It's such a...
Or his equivalent.
It's such a unique case in France. France is unaccustomed to technocratic governments the way Italy...
And they loved Draghi when he did it.
Well, the political class in Italy is often blocked and doesn't actually like passing reforms. And so when there's hard work to be done, technocrats are brought in. But after that, we've seen populists come roaring back. That happened after Mario Monti's technocratic government during the euro crisis in 2012. And the thing about Macron's government is it was a little bit technocratic, but politically elected. And so I think if you put in technocrats now, I think there's a lot of frustration among voters who said, actually, we voted for politicians.
Which would last for 12 months. Then Macron can dissolve the National Assembly again.
Olivia Polsky, this is the irony. We're talking about, for the first time since the Fourth Republic, power going from the Élysée Palace to Parliament.
Yes. Well, it's quite new. It's a new situation.
Should the next prime minister, because the math is not there, should the next prime minister be a technocrat?
Oh, no, I think we need politics. I mean, if we don't want to have the far right in 2027, we need to send a message to the voters. And the message cannot be a technocratic one. So we have to send... they want change. And I'm sure that Emmanuel Macron has to understand it. They want change, and they want us to show them that we heard their message.
You agree, Sonia Crémy, you need a politician, not a technocrat?
Yes, I agree with you on that, because handling a country, it's not handling a company. And a lot of businessmen or people from... I'm an economist, you know, for Mation, but I have to do it. I have to say it today. We say that, okay, we have technocrat, but no, we need politic, because handling a country, it's not like handling a company. Yep.
Okay. Well, you can look at different ways. These people are never going to agree on anything, on any reforms, on any taxes, on any spending. So at the end of the day, I don't know whether it will be a technocratic male or female, or most likely someone from the center, perhaps, yep, backed by both the left and the right.
Maxime Dame, you know it's a bit of a bargaining, right? You campaign in verse and you rule in prose. So, for instance, pension reform.
Yes. If
there was a compromise by which a law was passed that said, we'll keep it at 60, going up to 64, but for those who started working very young, we'll count their years and they can retire earlier, wouldn't that resolve the problem?
Well, you're asking a very good question. So I think, okay, obviously the Nouveau Front Populaire would agree to this. It's one of their core pledge. Fine, this happens to be also one of the core pledge of the National Rally. So basically, the pension reform is the only thing on what these two parties or these two coalition can agree on. And both of them, they have the majority, you are right.
Because some people started working at 18. Yeah. It's unfair to them to have to be too.
I agree. So potentially, these two coalition who had each other, you know, from the left and far left to the far right, they could agree on one single thing, is to unwind the pension reform. So this is
I didn't say unwind. I said make it more fair for those who worked... Fair. At a very young age.
So, but potentially that would come with a cost. So, because if they do that, you have to be very mindful. Let's say they vote to lower the retirement age for people who started to, you know, work below 20 or something like that. Then, so they can do it, but then they have to find the funds to finance this reform, because it's going to cost about 17 billion euros per year. And then when it comes to the specifics of finding the funding, they're not going to agree. The National Rally is going to say, no, we don't want tax increases. The left is going to say, yeah, we're going to fund this by increasing taxes on the wealthy, on the corporates, or whoever. And they're never going to agree on that.
Olivia Polsky?
Yes, well, I think it's too easy, but we have 300 economists who have written about the fact that our program is realistic and that
I'm not saying it's not realistic, I'm just saying politically. I'm just saying politically it's going to be hard to unwind the pension reform.
Oh, yeah.
Because only the National Rally is going to potentially support you, but then how to fund it?
If the Macronists don't hurt what the people say, I think if they continue as ever, I'm sure that Marine Le Pen will come in 2027. So they have to hear that they have to change. So we will have to find a few things that, like the... retirement, the pensions reforms revoke.
Would they vote for it?
I'm not agree, because if you see really this des retraites, if you see it, it's not easy at. It's simple. We cannot work. We can work. We will work for more years, etc. It's not as easy as that. We have 46 special
pension plans.
So it's really hard. I know exactly. We tried to do it before 2022, but. A point here. Le nouveau flot of Front Populaire, we talk about it like a huge block. But inside, inside it, you have Olivier Faure. Yesterday, he took the floor.
You head have of the socialists.
Mélenchon. You have the Green. You have and everybody yesterday they took the floor one after one to say, okay, we will court blah blah blah, and we will work with the new government. They are okay between them for the nuclear sector. They are okay between them for the minimum salary. They are clear. They was okay to save their place. As MPs,
we have a common program.
Yeah, but
you're unfair.
I think you have a lot of disaccord also.
We have many agreements. We have many, and it's our program.
So
Rachel Donadio.
I think that the pension reform question gets to the heart of one of the interesting things going on here, is that people want change, but they actually want things to stay the same. And they actually know that their parents might have been able to retire earlier. Mm-hmm. And it's very hard for any politician to say, actually, your future might not be as good as the past was. And that is why the far right runs on that we want to return to something. And that is also why some on the left want to return to something, whereas Macron and his more technocratic approach has been, we need these changes to make the country function better into the future. Hard to sell politically.
Let's look at what voters told the pollsters before the European elections. Top issue, inflation. And they talked about spending power a lot. And then you see some of the other issues coming down. It's interesting because the French used to have this obsession with unemployment. Look how far down the list it is.
Yep.
On that, which means that the economy, Maxime Dalmé, has changed a lot. And there is this feeling when it comes to purchasing power, when it comes to spending power, that, there are so many French families that are one car breakdown away from sliding into poverty or that have... You know, and the feeling that you do have to finance that. And the left, in its platform, talks about a 12.5% increase in the minimum wage. They talk about an indexation of salaries on inflation. But what something has to be done so that people don't feel this sense of precariousness.
Yeah, you're quite right. It's on the good side, indeed, the unemployment rate is very low in France, around 7.5%. So this is very good news for everyone. The French economy created a lot of jobs over the past few years. But on the other end, this inflation problem, and I think the core issue was people in France, you know, they work, they get wages, but they don't feel they get the benefits of working, you know. They work long hours and stuff, but they cannot make their ends meet. So there's the frustration. They have jobs, they work.
But they cannot pay their bills and so on.
Yeah, they have to pay bills, which have increased a lot. And so there's a lot of frustration. Now, if you look at the economic platform from different parties, I have my doubt that it will address these questions.
Because France has the same problem as Keir Starmer discovered last Thursday. State coffers are empty.
Well, we know how to... I think that Emmanuel Macron made a choice with the taxes. We think we can tax the richest, and we want to do that to find some more money to finance our reforms.
Maxime Dalmé?
You can certainly, it depends on your political opinion, you can certainly tax the richest, you can remove the flat tax implemented by Macron, that could be, I think this is in your pledges as well.
Yes.
But also, if you start to increase taxes massively, there's an issue in France because taxes are already very high. So you sort of discourage or disincentivize people to work more. So I think that is not a sound policy. You know, in France, you know, taxes on labor is very limited. You should rather try to lower them rather than to increase them.
And when we look at this list, again, this is a survey, Sonia Crimi, but we see crime and violence, immigration, number two and three on that list of concerns. You were telling us earlier in this conversation that crime, issues of assimilation and integration for immigrants, these things were high on voters' minds when you went and campaigned.
Yeah. When we talk about crime and violence, we have to say that the most important people they suffer from this, they are in popular place. They are not
working
in
class areas.
Yeah, they work working class. So we have to remind this. I think it's important to remind because when we hear Bardella, when we hear it, we think that in our countryside we have a lot of crime, etc., etc. I'm not saying it's not a problem, but we have to solve it first of all in a popular place.
In working class areas. Rachel Donadio?
I think that the conversation about crime and immigration have become intertwined in ways that are quite upsetting, and they have fueled the rise of the far right. There's a sense of there are these foreigners, there are these immigrants, we don't feel at home anymore. That's what someone I spoke to in Burgundy in the countryside said. It's this rhetoric about what happened to France. I'm not agreeing with this. I'm just saying that this is something that's out there. I was struck watching television during the campaign. There are constantly ads for home security alarms. It either responds to or feeds a sense that people feel very insecure. And I think that that needs to be decoupled from a larger conversation about immigration, integration, and all these other questions.
This issue of identity is an important one. And Olivia Polsky, the left also has identity politics within it. So how do you answer the far right, which, as Rachel aptly put it, mixes together the issue of crime and immigration?
I think this is our failure too. For years before, we let the far right say immigration is the problem of the insecurity, and let them do this association, and they won in the what we call the la bataille culturelle, cultural war, and. But I think that we have to say too that the first persons who are victims of insecurity are the popular
working class people. What Sonia Kimi was saying.
The working class. Yeah, that's for sure.
Taylor Swift is popular. Working class. Working class.
We don't talk enough about what migrant can give to this country. I'm an example for that.
You're born in Tunisia.
I born in Tunisia and I came here since 18 right. years. So we fail on that. And I think that the socialists, sorry, but when you was in the government and when you say la déchéance de nationalité, when we talk about Burkini, and we suffered a lot. It's why people like me, they left at that time the Social Party and they arrived in 2016 with Emmanuel Macron. So I think that we don't have to talk at the same time about immigration and security, but we have like people
have
from
the,
we have to
Gabriel
talk about security
too.
Problem. We yeah. have to be blind. We don't have to be blind about that and give the floor to the far right to talk only about security.
Did you say that to Gabriel Attal when he was?
I'm not agree with him for the abaya, and you know it.
By the way, among those elected on Sunday is the former president, François Hollande, a socialist. He's the first former president to return to parliament since 1986, when Valéry Giscard did the same. Why did he go back? Is he positioning himself as a potential Spitzenkandidat for the left?
I don't know his
left?
Deep motivation.
But he's
I
from
know,
your formation. Are you I happy to see him back?
Or is well, he... I think we need everybody. And he's one of the most popular politicians in France. He's the force in the polls, so it's important. And I think he knows, as we all feel, that it's an historical moment. So,
on paper, France is a parliamentary democracy. But after World War II, there was the Fourth Republic. France had 25 governments in 12 years. There you see Pierre Mendès-France, who at one point was prime minister for 48 hours during that time. That was before General de Gaulle came in and boosted the executive branch of power. You know, for years, Maxime Dalmé, people have been saying in France, there's an institutional problem. Something's broken because the president has too much power. He can rule with too many decrees. There's lots of levers for the president. Here we have a situation where everybody is saying power is back in the hands of the National Assembly. Are you happy?
Well, I don't think this is the best situation, clearly. I think one of the main benefits of the Fifth Republic is to instill a bit of a stability of French politics, which has been very stable over the past 200 years at least.
But then the president becomes the magnet for everything, and if he becomes unpopular,
I think one big mistake was to remove, what we call the septennat, the seven-year
term. Seven-year term for the president.
I think it created a lot of distortions because it empowered the president too much, perhaps. And before you know, it was a little bit more balanced between the parliament and the president. I think it was a big mistake.
Final word on this, Rachel Donati. France, is it due for... Some are saying that this could lead to a constitutional upheaval.
Well, maybe it'll lead to constitutional upheaval, but I think that one of the other things we have to see, Maxime, you could talk about this, is bond spreads. If those go up, then it actually reduces the amount of power that politicians have over their own economic sovereignty.
And that we shall see. France, which has to watch the markets, has to watch the rest of Europe. And we want to thank you for watching. I want to thank Olivia Polsky, Sonia Crimi, Maxime Darmé, Rachel Donadio. Thank you for being with us here in the France 24 debate.